Hey, welcome back to Conversations with Paul Nielsen. This is Paul Nielsen, your host, producer, all that good stuff. Hey, just real quick, did you like the Facebook page yet? Conversations with Paul Nielsen? If not, go do it. Also, while you're listening to this, do me a favor, go down to where you can subscribe and give a rating and a review of the podcast. It really helps out independent podcasting people like myself to get recognition and to be able to grow and things along those lines. It comes up on other people's suggestions to listen to the podcast as well. So if you enjoy it, definitely go ahead and subscribe and give a star rating and a review, and that would be fantastic. Thank you so much for doing that. Today, we have a special guest. We have got what I consider one of the badasses of Salt Lake City, Kat Palmer. She is an amazing artist, photographer, heavily involved with all things art in the art scene here in Salt Lake City. She is an advocate, an activist here in Salt Lake City as well, very much involved in many different veins and avenues here. Today we discuss many different things, from how we met, underground music scene in Orange County, a little bit of that, her coming out story, and many, many more things, including some of her art and some of the experiences that she's had. So definitely take a listen and enjoy it. Good to see you.
Oh my gosh. Good to see you. I'm so sorry about the technical difficulties. Oh, holy shit.
It's okay. I've got a look. I like the idea of that squad cast, but I think I need to look at a different platform.
My computer's just old too. Like, it's just my sad computer. So
I don't even think it's that. At least you had video this time. I mean, last one I did with Tim Moyer. He's out of California, and we couldn't see each other.
So
it was a little weird, but the audio was fine. It's just the video. And that's usually helpful sometimes, just to kind of see reactions.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I've had so many technical difficulties lately. I know we need technology, and it's like, yeah, it's so helpful. But I also, like, it's so frustrating for me because I also don't understand it. And so it's like way difficult.
Well, we grew up in a time where technology wasn't as prevalent.
It wasn't just a thing.
No.
Like, it was barely coming around, like, right when I was graduating, I think we're about the same age.
We're
graduating high school and starting college. And so, I study photography, and digital wasn't around. I mean, it was just analog. And so it was like, I went to college for film, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it just wasn't a thing. Like, I remember like the AOL chat rooms.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I saw somebody posted up on Facebook, show me a picture of the time when you started using the internet. Like, this is going to be funny. Mm-hmm. Found the little icon for the AOL chat. Threw that up there. People didn't even know what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
because it's that
my old. Kids like calling me a boomer. They're like, okay, boomer. I'm not a boomer.
No.
But they like calling me a boomer. And I'm like,
my kids do the same thing.
I feel like one though. But it's probably my gray hair. It doesn't help, but like, I feel like one. So yeah.
Well, if my hair was still full and not thinning as much, I definitely have a lot of the gray hair coming in and things. So I feel you there. But gray is fantastic.
I love having gray hair. I love that I went gray early. I love having gray hair. I was very excited when it came in. And so I just shaved it all and just like let it come in. So
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And it looks good.
Lucky.
Looks good.
Yeah, I feel really, really lucky. I wanted to go gray before I was 40. And so at 39, it just all came in. And so
there you go.
Yeah.
Why did you want to go gray before you're 40?
Because I think it's cool to have like a young face and gray hair. I think it's way cool. And so I had started going gray at 19. So I knew And really? My grandmother, yeah. And my grandmother, I had little bits of gray, but I always dyed my hair, so nobody knew.
Yeah.
But, I didn't know. Yeah, my grandmother, not the one that raised me, but my maternal grandmother, she went gray early. She was gray in her 40s. And so I was like, fingers crossed. Let me get those jeans. Let me get those jeans. And so I was like, I was really hoping. And sure enough, I was keeping tabs on it in my mid-30s, like just watching my route. Just
watching.
I was like, come on. Come on. You can do it.
And there you go. There you go. Yeah. So you just turned 39, right?
I just turned 41.
Turned 41. So, okay.
Yeah, I just turned 41. But no, I'm just saying I shaved my head at 39.
And just
I just let it come in. So before I was 40, it just all came in. So
yeah. And we're about the same age. You're 41. I'm 44.
Yeah. Okay. So we're in the same realm. Now, people probably don't know you were at my 18th birthday party.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of had adjacent friend groups and some of them kind of overlapped. I think it was Rick that actually introduced me to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And back when I was closeted and dating boys and Mormon.
Me too. Not dating boys, but you know. doing the whole Mormon thing and such. But yeah, so a lot has changed since those days. I mean,
I was 18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I had just gotten back from my mission or maybe it had been a year or so before that. And that I got back, and I don't know exactly how we kind of met, but I think it was through Rick. And then
it was probably because I remember you being Rick's bestie is what I, in my head, that was the thing that you were Rick's bestie. Yeah. And I just, very briefly dated him. I mean, it was just like maybe a few weeks or something. Okay. He was on the path to find a wife and I was not. And so,
it didn't work. Yeah. He was definitely on the path to find a wife and did. And
Yeah. I was like, oh no. And what's funny is like, I ended up getting married pretty quickly after that, which was weird because I wasn't sure if I wanted the whole marriage thing. Right. And I wasn't sure if I wanted children. And because back then I still knew I was gay, by the way, like still knew. Blake knew most of our marriage. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
he asked pretty early on about SSA, same sex attraction.
Yeah.
And so, but it's funny because I met Blake, and Blake knew Rick as well.
Like, yeah, I knew Blake. We went to high school together.
Oh, you did? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, so I knew of him and things. I mean, we didn't like hang out or know each other well, but I knew of him.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I think Rick and I were hanging out one night and Blake had pulled up in his vintage truck.
Yeah.
And like rolled down his window and I hadn't met Blake yet. So yeah, it's crazy how that all worked out, you know? And I mean, and honestly, like looking back at everything, like I'm glad because like, I don't know. I mean, chances are I was going to get married young. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was Mormon. It's what happens, you know, like I was probably going to get married. And like, I'm thankful I married somebody that was willing to go to mosh pits with me. Like, you know what I mean? and I'm thankful I married somebody that shaved my head right after I got married because like I grew out my hair to try to go be like a girl. You know what I mean? To go get, you know, cause I was really into the music scene, you know, in Orange County and in LA, like that was my thing.
Yeah. And that's kind of what kind of attracted me to learning about you and getting to know you is because growing up, I always wanted to know about like the underground music scene. And I just didn't know how to find it and get it. Yeah. The internet wasn't around then. So, I mean, it wasn't as easy. You had to be in that scene and had to be the had to have connections.
Yeah, you had to know. And that was my life. Like poetry and music were my life as a kid. And that's like all I cared about. I really didn't care about anything else.
Yeah.
Growing up. And so you were there at my 18th birthday party. Mm-hmm. Had some badass bands play.
Yeah.
And so I was thankful, like looking back, you know, like I was gonna get married and I couldn't marry like a normal Mormon boy, you know, mm-hmm. like
no, it wouldn't have worked.
It wouldn't have worked. Like I needed somebody that was okay with me being rowdy and obviously okay with me being gay, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I was still very closeted. Like that wasn't going to come out until my 30s, you know?
What took so long for that
to happen? Well, I was Mormon and closeted, like, yeah. you know, that indoctrination ran really deep. Oh, like,
yeah, it does.
I was a believing Mormon, you know, like I mm-hmm. wanted my eternal family. And so I was shoving that shit down. And, you know, I told Blake, I was like, as long as you don't bring it up, like, I can do this. I just want my eternal family. Just don't talk about it. Like, I can ignore this. Just don't bring it up. I can stay focused, you know? And so, yeah, that didn't work out so well.
No.
You know, and he just, you know, he brought it up just kindly, like several years later, just wanting to know about it. And I got so mad. I was like, why would you jeopardize our eternal family like this? Like, what's wrong with you? And, you know, and then he brought it up again. And then finally he was just like, I think you need to go figure this out. Like, I think you got to stop hiding. Like, and wow. I think he's like, you've just got to be true to yourself, you know? And it still took like a long time. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I still, even after I came out, I still dated guys for a while because it was easy. Yeah, it's not like they hand you a manual. It's not like they're like, so you're gay now. Like, this is what you do, you know?
Yeah. Refer to page 3, you know, in paragraph 5 uh-huh. on starting yeah. a relationship. It doesn't work that way.
And it's not like I just started drinking right away. And it's not like I went to bars and,
yeah,
you know, online dating is not something I enjoy. And so I didn't know where to meet people. I didn't know what I was doing. Like I was terrified and having to undo so much of the patriarchy bullshit and heteronormative, yeah. you know, lifestyle I was in for so long. It took so much undoing and I would just get lazy and it was just easy. And I was still figuring out my sexuality and still figuring out what I was attracted to and what I liked. And like,
right.
It just took so long. It took so long. But I finally figured it out. Like, and it was finally like, you know, but it took a long time.
I think when you repress those feelings for so long, it's going to take time to kind of really let that come out and be comfortable with it. You know, I just spoke with a good friend of mine. He's actually on the podcast, and recorded a couple of weeks ago. And he kind of faced the same thing, was going heavily involved with Mormonism and really kind of knew at an early age, but just same thing, wanted that eternal family, wanted to live the path that his parents and the church and everything had out for him, that path that we're all taught. And he met a guy and he knew at that point that if he really wanted to be authentic and really wanted to live the life that's going to make him happy, there's going to be some consequences and there's going to be some changes he's got to do and he's got to embrace it. And he's embraced it and loves who he is. And he's just so much more happy now that he's living his authentic life. And it's been amazing to see. Cause I met him when he was not out and kind of denying himself. And over the last few years, you can just see it on his face, how happy he is.
That's amazing. That's so good. Yeah. It's like looking back to like the journey I took, like, I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like when I was so closeted and gay, like looking back, I feel like I always was who I was, like, as far as being authentic to myself, like, you know, I kept shaving my head every few years. Like I looked pretty butch for a very long time.
Yeah.
And, like I've only ever worn masculine shoes, you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like, and you know, when I came out, nobody was surprised. Like everybody, my in-laws at the time, Blake's parents, they were just like, oh yeah, we've always known. They were like, we were just waiting for you to know. Like, we're glad that you know. And I was so shocked. I was like, wait, what? You always figured I was gay? They're like, yeah. When our nephew was visiting, he asked if you were a lesbian, and we've kind of just always known. And we just were waiting for you to come out. And when I told my mom, she's like, yeah, nobody's going to be surprised. And so it was like the most anticlimactic coming out story, which was great.
Yeah. Isn't that how it should be?
Yeah, it should be. But it was funny because looking back now, when I came out, it was like I did this pendulum swing and went super, super femme, like lipstick lesbian, like got the fake lashes, wore bright red lipstick for years, grew out my hair. Like, I just went like this crazy, you know, extreme for many, many years.
Why the shift?
I don't know. I really don't know, because it's like when I was closeted and hiding, I was shaving my head all the time and like wore almost no makeup. And then I came out and it was like all of a sudden I went crazy femme, and I took off my garments. And so I was wearing like really low cut tops.
Mm-hmm.
And I went really, really femme for a while. And then all of a sudden, like the pendulum swing came back. And I feel like I finally like found like who I am, and I'm like more comfortable in who I am. And like, you know, I went back to shaving my head, let my hair grow out.
Yeah.
I feel more natural, you know, took off my lashes. Like, I don't wear red lipstick anymore. And I have no judgment like on women that do this, you know,
at all.
But I just, looking back, it's so interesting because I did it for so long, and I still feel authentic to who I was at that time, but it also feels like such a different person, you know?
Right.
But I definitely feel more like me now. Like, I feel more at home, like in my body, and like, I don't know, being a little bit more butch, you know?
Right.
But I don't know. I don't even know if this is interesting. People are going to listen to this and be like, oh my God, she's so boring.
I doubt that. I mean, I consider, you've got your list of badasses in Salt Lake City, and you always forget to include you in that. You were absolutely one of those badasses of Salt Lake.
That's
not really, it's just the truth, you know. You are. I mean, you're heavily involved in the art scene. You're heavily involved in, you know, as an activist, and we need people like that. And that's what makes you a badass, is that you're not afraid to do that.
I feel like at one point I was heavily involved in the art scene. It's like, I don't know that I do it that much anymore. You know, like, I mean, I'm still making art and I'm still selling art, and that's how I make my living. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I used to like really like be involved in like doing stuff, and I have felt so stagnant for the last couple of years. And like, I haven't really created, I don't know, like I have a couple of series that have been stuck in my head, and I really want to get them out on paper, and I really want to do something, you know, like, I don't know. I think it goes back to that, like, where you feel like a fraud, you know?
Why would you feel like a fraud? I mean, if it's, like, it's something like, you're feeling, it's in your head, you've got to get it out.
Like, I know, but I mean, where you feel like, I don't know, like the times like I've won those awards, or like I've, like I don't feel deserving of them, you know, because I don't feel like I'm doing enough, or I don't feel like I'm creating enough. And, you know, at one time I felt really involved in the community, and I felt like I was doing things. And the last couple of years, I have not felt like I've been doing enough, you know, like I feel like I'm getting by, and I feel like, I don't know. Like, I see these artists out there. I don't want to say his name because I feel like I'm going to fuck up his last name. He's got such a hard last name, Josh Schumer. He's just doing all these amazing murals, and he has his hands on so many amazing projects, and I have so much mad respect for him, and I'm watching what he's doing, and I'm like, I don't know, like, I have artists that I really admire what they're, I want to be doing that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I feel like, I feel like I'm not doing enough. That's what I feel like. And I have these artists that they're just kicking so much ass. Like he was involved with the Black Lives Matters murals down there on 800 South. And I think it's like 300 or 400 West.
Yeah.
And he's doing these really cool recycling bins right now. And I was just like there looking at this Tribe Called Tribe Called Quest at Randy's Records. Like I hopped out of the car to just take a picture of a mural. And of course he's the artist that did that.
He's
like I just, yeah. You know what I mean? I'm just like, oh my God, he's got his fingers in everything. Like he's just doing cool shit all the time.
Yeah, it's his time right now and it's okay. I mean,
he's amazing.
You've got things that you're doing and things that are kind of brewing in your head. You'll be there again, yeah. You know, and I still think you still are there.
I need this pandemic to be
over. Yeah, I mean.
That's kind of you.
I think that's everybody just looking for this pandemic to be done.
To be over.
Get out and do stuff.
Go back to, yeah, for sure.
How has that pandemic kind of, has it hindered your art making or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. I'm used to like gathering large groups of people and, mm-hmm. creating, which I obviously can't do safely during a pandemic.
Yeah.
And then for the first half of the pandemic, I was dating a woman who was posing for me all the time. And, you know, she'd get naked for me and we'd create art. And yeah. I don't want to look at those images anymore. We've since broken up. And, you know, it was easy to have her as like my muse and work with her because that's who I was seeing and I could safely shoot that, you know,
right,
and create really cool art series. But it's hard during a pandemic because you can't, I don't feel safe, you know, wanting to put somebody at risk, you know, right, just for my art. I think that's selfish. And so, I did have my friend Esther, she came and stood on some books for me and I put her like in a fox mask and we shot some really cool body positive shots, but that's the only thing I've really done in this pandemic. Like I've got some things I'd love to shoot, like in a plague mask. I'd love to do some, you know, the doctor plague mask, but
yeah.
I don't know. Like I've really been such a recluse with my girlfriend the last 6 months. I really haven't done anything. I've moved my studio home and just been very cautious, you know. And I mean, I'm creating art and I've kind of revamped some old images digitally and I try to get creative and I've made some digital art of like icons that I really respect and love, but it's definitely hindered my creative process because I don't want to put anybody at risk.
Yeah. Who are those icons that you?
Oh, you know, mentioned? Dolly Parton. I love her so much. Yeah. So I did a piece of Dolly Parton and the Golden Girls and MASH. I grew up watching MASH and I love that poet who recently spoke, Amanda Gorman.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that she was so brilliant. And I did a little art piece of her. And I'm trying to think of what else I've created recently. I haven't done too much, just kind of a handful of things here and there. But
yeah.
I am a huge Dolly Parton fan. She's my queen. And you know, yeah. she helped fund this vaccine. So.
Yeah, I guess she gave something like $1 million to help fund it and do the research, and she's heavily involved with stuff.
Yeah, most recently she's like, I don't think I should be taking the vaccine just because I helped fund that. I was like, oh my God, you're a goddamn national treasure. Go get in line for that vaccine. We need you to be safe. You're 75. Like, go get the vaccine.
Yeah, you're definitely in line to be able to do that, even if you. Oh, we're a national treasure. You're of the age of being able to do it right now. So
like, I need you to be safe. Like, this has already been a hard enough year. Like, I don't need anything happening to you.
Yeah, we don't need to lose Dolly Parton or Betty White at this point.
I know. Betty White is also a national treasure. Like, she just turned 99. Can you believe
that? I know. That is crazy.
Yeah.
She's immortal. Like, I'm convinced of it.
I know. Like, we've got to start thinking about what kind of world we're going to leave for Betty White, you know?
So. Right.
Like, she ain't going anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How did you, I've listened to a lot of different podcasts and things that you've done. And you talk about what? Oh, God.
I said, oh, God. Some of those are cringy. I mean, I've done a lot and some of them are so cringy.
Don't go back and listen to my first couple episodes. Those are really bad. They're important, but they're bad because I didn't know what I was doing. Still don't, but I try. You had mentioned how you got started in high school with photography. In a couple of them, and yeah. How the teacher would basically put you on the photography kids on a bus and up into Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And everybody
just
else
drop
was,
us off for the day.
Yeah. Which is just mind blowing now. Hey, we're taking a field trip, get on a bus. We're going to drop you off in the middle of Los Angeles.
Yeah. Shit I did as a kid, I just think, I don't even know how I lived through it all, honestly. I like, now that I'm a mom, I just think there's no way I would let my kids do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, we have cell phones now that we can keep track of our kids, but yeah. I just think a lot of the things I did it just wasn't safe, you know? Yeah. And I don't think my grandparents raised me, but yeah. I don't think they knew what I was doing half the time. And they gave me a lot of freedom to just be me and to do my thing. But M was his name. Mulemeister, I think is how you said it. It was too hard to say. So he just let us call him M.
Yeah.
And I actually recently found his name badge because I stole it.
Oh.
And I like to take things as a keepsake that mean something to me and that are sentimental, and then I keep them like forever. And I stole it from him when I was in high school, and I just found it. He would load us up on a bus and drop us off in downtown Los Angeles and just let us loose.
Yeah.
And if you go to the Jed's Barber Shop on 2100 South and 2100 East, that location, you can see some of the images from that roll of film. That one is a walkthrough of 20 years of my life. All three locations, you can see images of mine, but that one particularly is a walkthrough from age 16 to 36.
Nice.
And I got my start just photographing people on the streets of Los Angeles. And I am known for my kind of iconic images of Spoon and Squid, which are the two homeless punk rockers from 1997 that I photographed, who would later be in Penelope Spheris's Decline of a Western Civilization Part 3. And Spoon would kill Squid. She would stab him to death with scissors. That's how I got my start as a kid. And I would just, as soon as I could drive, I would, drive down to Los Angeles on the weekends and photograph people. And then,
drew you to the people? Versus, like, most kids are going to do architecture or pretty little things.
That's what they were doing.
Yeah, what drew you to homeless people?
That's what they were doing. And I guess now they're calling them unsheltered people, but I liked people's faces and the stories that they would tell, and I just like people with interesting faces more than anything. I don't know. And then eventually, like, and of course I'd always ask permission, and I'd always, give them whatever money I had at the time. And then later I would interview people, just anybody, really, anybody willing to talk to me. It didn't even have to be, it could be just absolutely anybody. When I would travel, and I had this little camcorder. And then I'd go to shows, I'd interview people backstage, and My senior trip, I took this road trip up to Portland and stopped in San Francisco and then flew over to Hawaii, and I would just interview people and talk to them. And I was just a kid. I was 17 at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember I interviewed other punk rockers on the street, and I interviewed cops, and I interviewed the bassist from Fishbone, I remember interviewing a sex worker, and I interviewed a drug dealer, and I interviewed a surfer. I interviewed just anybody willing to talk to me, you know. And I remember I interviewed this old couple, that I can't remember. I remember they were a Jewish couple that were around during the Holocaust time. I took a train at one point. Oh no, this, I'm getting the stories mixed up. Sorry. That was when I was 15. Sorry. I'm getting stories mixed up. But I would interview people and just talk to anybody willing to talk to me. And I've never done anything with this footage. I just have all this footage of just talking to people. And I don't know if I'll ever do anything with it, but yeah.
It'd be really cool, like documentary.
Yeah, but those are people that are trying to make a documentary. Like, it's probably pretty shitty footage from a 17-year-old. You know what I mean?
Probably, like, but it'd still be fun to watch.
Like, you know.
But
I don't even know how watchable any of it is, you know?
Yeah. It still had to shape but kind of your attitude and kind of the direction that you went. You know, as far as you've gotten older and the different types of art that you've done, I'm sure it's somehow shaped some of those ideas, just with all the stories that you've been able to accumulate.
I think so. I mean, I don't know. I've always liked people. Like, I like people's faces, and I don't know, kind of like Diane Arbus. Like, she's my favorite photographer, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like she always found beauty kind of in people that society maybe didn't find beauty in.
Yeah.
And I like that about her. Like, I like that she liked just the not the standard and not the typical people. And I loved that she did that. And I love that she photographed people that were kind of forgotten about by society. And brought light to them, you know. And I was drawn to her at such a young age, and she took her life, I think the year I was born. I think the year I was born is when she took her life. I'm pretty sure. But I've just always been fascinated with her work. And but yeah, you know.
What was her name?
Diane Arbus.
Diane Arbus. I'm gonna have to look at some of her work.
And my teacher in school, like, he told me, it was probably like the biggest compliment I've ever had. He's like, you remind me of her. And that's, I had to go to the library and look her up because Google wasn't around, you know?
No.
So I was like, I don't know who that is. And so I had to go to the library and check out a book and look her up. And I just fell in love with her work. And I don't think any kid could probably get away with this now, but at the time, you know, he was letting me write my own curriculum, and I was allowed to shoot nudes, you know, in high school.
Wow.
And he was just like, make sure it's tasteful. Don't get me in trouble. And I was like, okay. And so that's when I shot my first nudes. I was in high school, and I just made sure nothing was showing. And he let me, you know, by my senior year, just let me do a lot. And I was really thankful for him. I tried tracking him down recently, but I don't know if he's still alive. And it was really hard. I found his son, but his son never wrote me back. And so.
That's it's unfortunate. I'm sure if he's still alive, I'm sure he'd want to know kind of what you're doing, or you may even know what you're doing. I mean, with the whole age of the internet now.
Yeah, I wanted to tell him. Like, I wanted to tell him that I went on, you know, to actually be a photographer. But, I went back as an adult. and kind of broke into the photography room at my high school. They're now doing digital and stuff, so I don't think the dark room is really being used anymore, but
probably not.
I went and visited it. It's a different teacher now. All the teachers are so young there now. I think all my teachers are retired because I've been out of school for like 24 years.
I know.
24 years.
God. Yep. Been out of school for 26. Something like 24
that. 24 years. Well, yeah. And so,
yeah. Yeah. Because I graduated in 95.
Yeah, I graduated in 97. And so I skipped a grade. So I was a little young. But yeah, so 24 years now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh,
what do you, what do you prefer? Do you ever use actual analog film anymore? Or is it all digital? And which do you prefer?
It's mainly all digital. I mean, I miss being in the dark room. I loved getting lost in there. I'd just be in there for hours. And I went to, you know, went to college for film, but I don't know, for my birthday this year, I busted out an old Polaroid and my girlfriend and I just took a bunch of Polaroid pictures and that was really fun. And I still have like a couple, I've got an old Holga and I still have, you know, some old film cameras, but, and, you know, the Photo Collective has dark rooms that you can rent and my mentor has a dark room that I can go use. I miss being in there, but I got rid of my dark room stuff years ago. Yeah. And while I prefer it, I mean, it's just more economical and just easier to do digital. You know, I joined the dark side of digital in, I think, 2006.
Okay.
I think is when I went digital. Yeah, I think it was 2006. So it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a little while. You did a shoot, I think it was pretty early on, where you had women shave their heads.
Yeah, that was 9 years ago. I just had a memory pop up. Yeah, I just said, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
Okay. Yeah, that was 9 years ago. A memory just popped up on my little Facebook thing.
How did that idea come?
Well, it's Allie Yost, I'll tell you what, she was my muse for that. She now lives part-time in Ecuador. I did one summer as an artist at the farmer's market, and I have like a mild obsession with women with shaved heads.
And well, you've shaved your head many times, so
I have above my bed, I have a giant painting of Jimmy Toro's of a woman with a shaved head. And then in my living room, I have two more giant Jimmy Toro's with women with shaved heads and a small painting of a woman with a shaved head by Jimmy Toro. So I love the aesthetic of women with shaved heads. I feel like it makes their eyes and their lips and their cheekbones like pop. This woman walks past my booth and she's just so striking, you know, she has a shaved head. And so like the following week, like, I'm just thinking about it and I'm just like, God, she was so beautiful. And like, I just want to photograph her and I don't know who she is, you know, I'm just like thinking about it.
Just
I'm
walk
like,
by I your
really,
booth.
Yeah. I was like, God, I really love to photograph her. And I was just thinking about like different shoots I could do with her. And I was just thinking about it. And then like the next week she walks by my booth again. And I scream at her because like, I don't have the best social skills. And so I scream at her, I've been thinking about you all week. Like, I don't say anything else to her. I just scream at her. And then I start chasing after her. Oh my God. Like, I was like, what is wrong with me? And she's so quiet and just reserved, and she just has this like random lady screaming at her and running after her. And at the time, I think I'm still married and Mormon at the time. I think I'm on the way out of my marriage, but I think I'm still married and Mormon at the time, because the photo that pulls up that thank God. I think this is the year that photo has finally been erased when you Google my name, but forever, it was this horrendous photo of me. And I'm wearing like a t-shirt underneath of like a dress. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it's a really the bad classic. The classic strap dress with a t-shirt underneath. Yeah, it was awful. Anyway, and it was a terrible angle and it pulled up every time you would Google my name. And I was like, God, I can't wait for the day that this is not the image that pulls up when you Google my name. And I think it took 9 years for it to finally get off the internet. Anyway, so I'm screaming at her and running after her like a mad woman. And I've been thinking about you all week. So she doesn't know what's going on, you know? Anyway, she was so kind and gracious. And so I think we exchange contact information at that point. And then I just start thinking about like what I wanted to do. And I just decided I wanted to have 10, and this was before it became like a popular thing. Now all sorts of women shave their heads. It's not a big deal. Yeah.
This was what, 9, 10 years ago. It just wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking like living in Utah, like so many women put at the time, they put so much emphasis on hair and being feminine and being sexy, and like so much of their self-worth was caught up in their hair. And so I just wanted to like strip that away and and just show that women could be beautiful and sexy without hair, you know, because I personally am very attracted to women without hair. Yeah. And I was so married at the time, being so Mormon.
Which makes the story even better, honestly.
And so gay. Oh, I'm so gay. So anyway, I think I was nursing Lucas at the time. I think he was a baby, or they were a baby at the time. Yeah. And it was so Mormon. Anyway, so I just started asking strangers, you know, would you shave your head for me? And I want you to be a part of this project. And because people were like, you have so many friends. Wow. I was like, oh God, I don't have this many friends. And I think at the end of the day, it was like 14 women shaved their heads for the project. And they all wore dresses because I guess I was still caught up in the heteronormative thing at the time. But I wanted it to be that when people were walking past the gallery that it was exhibiting in, I wanted it to just be so obvious, you know. And anyway, so, and that was how I met Nicole, who Jed from Jed's Barbershop, that she is married, they're married. And that was how the introduction came there. Anyway, so we had a big exhibit of this. It was called Age of Aesthetics.
Yeah.
And then later, I think my favorite part of the story is, so all the news stations covered it, which I was surprised. I didn't think they would. And that's not the favorite part of the story. I don't care about part.
Yeah.
But my favorite part of happened. The story, but they all covered it. It was in the newspaper, you know, blah, blah, blah. After it was all covered and it was in the newspaper, I got a letter from a 16-year-old girl who said that she had just shaved her head and she was getting a lot of flack from people saying like, if you want to be pretty or if you want to have a boyfriend or if you want to, you know, fill in the blank, that you need to have hair, which is such bullshit, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And then she was grabbing the Sunday paper to read the comics and came across my article about the Age of Aesthetics and about, you know, how I believe that, you know, women can be beautiful without hair. And she's just like, I feel so good. And I feel so good about this decision. And just reading your article, just, you know, gave me, and it was just like, that made everything, like all the work I'd put into it and everything. I was like, this kid feels good about herself. Like this is why I do this. Like it made me feel so good that this kid felt empowered and felt beautiful. You know, she's like, for the first time since shaving my head, I really feel beautiful. and it made me so happy. And anyway, but yeah, that was 9 years ago. And then I got divorced.
And then you got divorced.
And then I got divorced. Yeah, I think Lucas was 10 months old at the time.
Okay.
That exhibit came out.
Wow.
So it was like November. But yeah.
Nice. There was the last time I saw you, I don't even know if you even knew I was there. And I wanted to ask you about this experience, was when Temple Grandin was here in town.
Oh, I was her photographer that night.
Yeah. Yeah, we
Dr. Temple Grandin.
Yes, Dr. Temple Grandin. Mm-hmm. Shannon and I went, and that was, that's got to be at least almost 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Because our little one, Austin, was born, and we got invited to go.
Wow.
Somebody gave us tickets, and we went, and we brought him, and because he was hooked up and was not in a place where he can just be left with a sitter or anything like that.
Yeah.
And we saw you there. Like, we should go say hi. Jenny goes, no, she's working. I'm like, she's not going to care. Let's go.
No. Yeah. Always say hi.
And we didn't, but.
Oh, you didn't.
No, we did not. No.
Oh my God.
No, we didn't. You were kind of in the middle of talking to Dr. Grandin and some people around her and things. How was that experience shooting with Dr. Grandin? I know she's generally has her own photographer with her.
She does, who I'm friends with, by the way, Rosalie. Oh. I became friends with her after that night. Rosalie Winward is her normal photographer.
Yeah.
And one of her dear friends. And Rosalie has been her photographer for like over 30 years. And she is from New York, the photographer, and came out here to photograph birds, by the way, and now lives here. And we're now friends. But yeah, she does normally have her own photographer. But the Utah Film Center has had me photograph the Peak Awards for, I don't know, for like 8 years or seven okay. years or something. And that was the first one. And it was amazing. I mean, just being able to meet Dr. Grandin and be in her presence, and it was just so cool. And I had to learn how to use a different light that night because she doesn't do flashes because of her autism. And so I had to use a constant LED that night. And I had a second shooter that night that took like amazing photos as well, Ben. And I mean, the whole experience was amazing. I mean, she just is an amazing human being. Yeah. And I felt very, very honored. And she just has been named one of the top 10 professors of the United States.
Really? I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. And for people that don't know that are listening, she also redesigned, I think, I don't want to say all, but I'm going to say most, if not all, of the slaughterhouses in the United States to be just more humane for the cows. And so she's pretty incredible.
Yeah, she's brilliant, you know, being able to go in and she's able to see things differently than a lot of other people. And that has to do a lot with her autism. And I've had to learn a lot about it because my boy Logan is high functioning. You wouldn't know it by talking to him or anything, but but it's been a lot of work. So, I mean, he's got some of the sensory issues where I understand the flash would, that always bothered him too. And loud noises and things, and he's been able to deal with it and learn how to deal with it. But it was really interesting to sit and watch her speak, Dr. Grandin speak about her experiences. And I'm like, wait, that's totally Logan. That's totally what he does. And that's, it was amazing. It was really awesome to see you get that opportunity to be able to photograph her and be there. Because she's really a special woman.
She really is. I felt really, really lucky. Like, it was pretty incredible. And then her photographer, Rosalie, like was photographing her receiving an award. I can't remember if it was like Harvard or Yale or something, like a couple years later, and calls and texts me and asks my advice. And I was like, you are not asking my advice like right now. Like, I was like blown away. I was like, you know so much more than I do, like, stop it. But yeah, Rosalie and I have since become friends, and I just adore the heck out of her. And yeah. And then the next year, Carrie Fisher won the award.
Yeah.
For the Peak Awards. Yeah. And that was a whole nother just really cool experience that I can't believe I got to have. And yeah. Yeah. But I feel pretty lucky. Anyway.
Pretty fortunate. It's some really cool experiences you've had.
6 years. She was the only person that didn't get back to me. Cause she's just a busy person, you know? And she's one of my good dear friends. And so, and last minute, Angela Brown had a conflict with work, something with work came up. And so last minute, Angela was not able to make it, but essentially everybody we asked said yes, which yeah. I was shocked. I was not expecting that, like, at all. And, I was really surprised. Doug Fabrizio was the first person to get back to me and say yes, which I was really excited to have him because I just adore Doug. And Doug, I know him from the Peak Awards. He's usually the person to interview the recipient of the Peak Awards. So I'd see him every year at that. And Mary Nichols, she wanted to do it so bad, but Channel 2 owns her face. And okay. So she had to jump through some hoops to be able to participate. And we had to wait to hear back from like the powers that be.
Yeah, legal and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, finally I had to just tell them. I was like, look, like I could have somebody replace her spot tomorrow. Like I need to know because we have to move forward with this. Like, you know, and finally they just gave her the go ahead, which was amazing. And I expected it to be a more controversial subject or image and get a lot more pushback than I did. I got almost no pushback, which was surprising. And yeah, like it was really fun. And since then, that was the first time that I met Bill Allred.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that I met Pat Bagley. And since then, both of those people have become like really important people to me. Bill and I became good friends after that. And Pat has become like family to me. After that, he and I started just getting drinks here and there. And then we did a trade where I photographed his son and wife and he drew my family. And then we just started doing trivia and poker and then holidays together. And like,
That's amazing.
Yeah. But we didn't know each other before that Last Supper. And then Bill interviewed me for his podcast. And then I was briefly on X96 for something. I can't remember what now. But then we just started, I don't know, Bill and I just became friends, but he's not really on social media. No. We just started seeing each other at different events and we just became friends because we have friends in common, you know, because it's a small city. And
yeah, it is a incredibly small city.
Yeah. But yeah, it was wild because I think had that been done, you know, in any other city, you know, like any other big city, you know, Salt Lake's a small city, but had that been done in like New York or LA, and you picked, you know, the badasses of LA or New York, I think people would have shown up with an entourage. It would have been so bougie and like, you know what I mean?
It would have lost some of the artistic nature of it because you've got egos involved with it at that time and it, the honesty in it. And it's a beautiful picture. I love the stained glass behind everybody. It's just gorgeous.
Thanks. Yeah, we did very minimal Photoshop on that. That's a real image with almost no Photoshop. Chad Zavala helped me with the lighting and he helped me with the post-production on that. And what's wild about that, Chad Zavala, he likes to keep a very low profile. He's very quiet. He is now dating, and like, I mean, they live together, like dating, like legit dating. Yeah. The best friend of my girlfriend. So
yeah, with, definitely with, small town.
It's such a small town. Like it's such a small town. And so like, yeah, like they were lawyers together or attorneys together, like at the current job that she has. And like when we found that out, I'm like, it's such a small like city, you know? Like like Chad and I go way back, you know.
I think people don't understand, especially here in Salt Lake, that we kind of back up a little bit. My LDS mission was served up in Ogden.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I love Ogden.
Ogden's fantastic. It's got a, like a grittiness and an honesty to it that is just really cool. It's what?
And the cutest houses.
Yeah. Yeah. Love the houses. Like I when I was up there, I lived like on 27th and Fowler and these little brick houses, and they're just amazing. But people, what I learned was that people think that Ogden's massive and then that Salt Lake is just this inconceivably large town. And I'm like, this is not what it is. And I was having this conversation with one of my friends. And she was saying, yeah, Salt Lake's a big city. And I said, it's not really that big of a city.
No.
Because let me give you some comparison here. The town I grew up in, La Habra, it's 700 over 7.5 square miles. Uh-huh. There's 60,000 people in that city.
Okay.
Yeah. Salt Lake City, it's 103 square miles. And there's like 120,000 just in the Salt Lake City, like proper area, not like the metropolitan area, but in the actual city.
So what are you considering the parameters is what I want to know. Like where are the parameters?
It's the actual city limits. So not like including like South Salt Lake or Sugar House or anything, just the city of Salt Lake.
Okay.
Yeah. And it just blew her away that Salt Lake City is not a massive place. It's very small.
Comparative to pull up Anaheim. Do me a favor right now and pull up Anaheim. Because that's where I spent my teenage years. Because I was trying to explain this to my girlfriend the other day. Like the size of Anaheim, and now I forget the numbers.
Area of Anaheim. Let's see.
Because she grew up, she's Midwest, she's a Michigan girl. Okay. And then she was also in Illinois for a little bit. But trying to explain to her, she's never been to Orange County. Yeah. And trying to explain Orange County to her and the size of it.
Yeah, it's massive. Like Anaheim is 50.8 square miles.
And then how many people?
Population. 349,000.
349,000. Mm-hmm. And how many people in Salt Lake?
About 120.
Isn't that insane? Like, it's and so that's why when people are like, I'm like, Salt Lake City is not a big city.
No.
Because Anaheim's not a big city. You know what I mean? Like Anaheim is not a big city and it's way bigger than Salt Lake City.
Yeah. You know, actually just pull the population of Salt Lake City. It's 197,000.
Yeah.
Of Salt Lake
City. And Anaheim is certainly not bigger than Salt Lake, you know?
No, it's 50 square miles. It's half the size of Salt Lake.
Right.
But almost 100,000 more people.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so that's why, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's funny to me. But I'm like, yeah, Salt Lake's not a big city. Like,
no.
You got to go to, like, LA, San Francisco, like, New York. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, these are Chicago, you know, these are big cities.
These are big cities, yeah. I've got a good friend that grew up in Manhattan. Right there by Central Park and things. And she calls Salt Lake a boutique city.
Yeah. That's and a I cute way to term. Put it. That love is a that cute term. Way to put it. Boutique city. Yeah. It's tiny, you know,
it's tiny. It's got these little nooks and things that are really kind of interesting. And you can mm-hmm. find what you want, but you kind of got to look and it's just cute and small and it's quaint and it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a small city. And I love Salt Lake. I mean, I love Salt Lake so much. I put it on my leg, you know, I have the whole, whole damn skyline on my leg, you know? But yeah, it's definitely a small city.
There's a reason why people call it Small Lake City. It's tiny. You run into people that you would never even think about running into just away from where you live.
Right. Well, and we all know each other. And my one kid, like, I mean, it really is just so small. I belong to a free group. I mean, this is going to be a real boring story, folks. Just fast forward through this part. But I belong to a free group and I needed a jump rope for my kids' PE class. And I just put on there and, a person on the free group's like, I've got one. So I go pick it up. And then fast forward several, months. And my kid is making, these little holiday cards for their best friends. And we go to drop them off. And I'm like, wait, I've been to this house before. And I was like, I picked up a jump rope from here weeks ago. I was like, ask your friend if their mom is in the free group. And my kid's like, I'm not doing that, mom. That's really lame. And so eventually we find out not only is the mom in the free group, but she's been following me on Instagram for years. And like, we're all connected. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't realize this. And she's like, oh my gosh, I have followed your work for years. Oh my gosh, your kid is best friends with my kid. Like, we didn't realize all of these connections, I just needed a jump rope, and we weren't paying attention, because we're just in the free group. We're not paying attention. Like, oh, this mom needs a jump rope. Here's a jump rope. Like, not putting two and two together, she's not paying attention that it's my, anyway. We're all connected.
Oh, absolutely. There's going to be a connection. It almost feels like we play a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here in Salt Lake.
Yeah. Though I think it's only 1 degree. I really believe I'm 1 degree separated from everybody in Salt Lake. Like it's, which is why it's like, I keep pissing people off and it's like, at some point I got to probably reel that in.
So. Probably not. No. No, keep pissing people off. This is how we get shit done. I mean, really.
Oh my God. The hate mail I get.
If you're not pissing somebody off, you're doing it wrong.
Oh my God. Looking at you, Carrie Ann Lazenby. Looking at you. Anyway. I cannot wait for this Utah legislature, whatever bullshit session to be over. I tell you what, like, I'm just done with it this year. Like it's exhausting. And I don't know. I am done with it. It feels very discombobulated, not being able to meet as a group and go up there as activists. And
speak your mind things.
So right now I'm sick of the copy and paste emails I'm getting. And
how does somebody organize now to be able to do that? Cause I mean, we've got the rights to be able to do it, but if we're not able to, form large groups or be somewhere.
I mean, I belong to online groups. I belong to online groups. And then the things I get my bees and my bonnets about, I just tag the right people. And then they, put stuff in their groups and then their people start emailing folks. And then other groups send out updates so I can be informed. And then sometimes like I don't have things on my radar. And so, I'll get a message at 1 a.m., are you aware of HB 92, which I was not aware of and it hadn't been assigned to a committee or anything yet, but that's the one that affects my kid and it affects all transgender youth.
What is that? Because I'm not familiar with it.
That one is, basically that kids don't have rights to healthcare. And like, if my kid wants to be on hormone blockers or have anything done, they can't have anything done till they're 18. And I don't know why the government is trying to make any sort of decision for my child, but it's a whole bunch of bullshit. And I don't know why they keep putting transgender kids on the chopping block, but I need you to stay out of my house. I need you to stay out of my kids' lives. You know what I mean? Like, don't make decisions for my uterus and don't make decisions for my children. Like, that should be up to me and my healthcare provider. And that should be up to me and my child and their healthcare provider.
Right. And that's HB 92.
That one's HB 92. And it's just, it's straight up. It's just a hate bill. And And it's going to affect my kid if my kid ever wants to be on hormone blockers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that affects my kid right now. My oldest is transgender.
Oh, so you're going to want to know about HB92.
Yeah, and this is the first time I've heard about it. So I wrote it down. Yeah. I got to look at it. And you're right. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the government. It has everything to do with the parents of that child and sitting down with that child and making those decisions together and then going to a doctor and making those decisions together. It has nothing to do with the government.
They should not have any say about my kid's healthcare, period. Like,
no.
And what my kid wants to be doing. And like, it's just upsetting. And yeah. So you might want to get on the horn about HB92, write to your representative, tell them to vote no on it. Go follow. Equality Utah has been doing updates as far as where it's at in the process. But yeah, it's real upsetting. And there's just a lot of hate bills like right now. Like, there's several legislators up there that are just very misinformed, and they are coming after transgender kids, and it's upsetting. So
how do we change that? How do we get that message across that it's not okay? I mean, other than sending emails and phone calls, because honestly, I don't know.
Emails and phone calls, but also speaking up. People like to share memes right now that are really misinformed. You know, right now it's a big dude in a little sports bra. They think it's real funny to say Megan wants to join the sports team. It's not funny. It's very anti-trans and it's very harmful. And people are very misinformed right now. So back in the day, you know, the last thing that we were getting attacked about was, you know, gay marriage is going to it's going to be detrimental to marriages and it's going to be detrimental to families. And guess what? It's not. We're six years into this and it's not detrimental. And marriages are still intact and everything is fine, you know. And it used to be the thing that was being spread around and said was that gay teachers are going to molest children and you can't have gay teachers around children. And guess what didn't happen? That wasn't happening. And so right now the big thing is that's being that the right and that these Christian groups are saying the big thing is transgender kids in sports. And that's the big rhetoric that is being misinformed and spread around. And so people need to be informed, and what they like to hide behind quote unquote science, which when they start saying that, I know that they're not actually reading any science. They're reading bullshit that they've seen on the internet, and they're just using the word science to hide behind their bigotry. It's just like when people use the word Bible to hide behind their bigotry. Yeah.
I think the word science is used on both sides of the issue too.
Right.
You know, I see it on both sides, and it's.
And when these transgender kids are taking, first of all, kids want to just have high school experiences.
Yeah.
And they just want to play. And I think adults are coming in and mucking it all up. And it's really sad and it's really heartbreaking because we just need to let kids be kids and play the fucking game.
Yeah.
And there's a really great documentary out there that Mac Beggs was in. I think it's called Changing the Game, I think is the name of the documentary. But if you Google Mac Beggs, Beggs, it talks about this kid from Texas who is a transgender boy who was just wanting to play sports. And they kept forcing him to play on the girls' team. And thankfully, the law eventually changed and things are fine. And now he's in college and all is well. But it was the fight that he and other transgender youth have fought of trying to play on the correct team that they want to play on and what these kids go through. And there's so much misinformation out there. So I think if you could get people to watch that documentary, people that are misinformed, they can see what these kids are going through. Also, right now, the big thing is transgender girls, right? People are freaking out about quote unquote boys being in the locker room, right? That's not what's happening. And these transgender girls that are on all these hormones, first of all, they're on estrogen. And the things that their body are going through to transform, these people don't realize what they're going through and what their bodies are going through. Yeah. They're not on testosterone, first of all, you know what I mean? And the things that they're going through to change. And these folks are just hateful and they're bigots. And they probably also don't know any transgender kids and they don't know what has to take place. And I wish that they could step back from their bigotry for even 2 seconds and have some empathy and maybe actually learn a little bit and stop hiding behind quote unquote science, because it's a whole lot of bullshit. And so I shut the shit down when I see that meme. I speak up. So besides sending emails, I speak up whenever I can. I try to send people to watch that documentary, because I feel like if they can really see and empathize and see these kids that they just want to play sports. And when it comes down to Olympic levels, that's the only time it actually matters. And when it matters, then how many transgender folks do you know that are taking home Olympic medals? None. So why are these people freaking out so bad? Do you know what I mean? Like, why? Mm-hmm. And these people try to pretend like they care about children. And they try to use this, we want to protect kids. No, they don't. Because at the end of the day, transgender folks are not molesting kids. They're not predators. In fact, transgender people need to be protected. They are the most vulnerable and they are the people that need the most protecting. And so these folks don't care. They just are bigots and they're just using bullshit, like screaming about bullshit to hide behind their bigotry. And it's very upsetting. So anyway, I get in fights with them a lot.
Good. It needs to happen, you know?
I'm raging really on the internet every week.
you have to. I mean, you got to speak the truth. And even if it just helps somebody look, one person to look into it and realize that these kids aren't any different than anybody else.
And they need to be allowed to play sports. I feel like adults keep coming in and fucking things up. And
well, that's what we do. We fuck things up.
And kids just need to be allowed to be kids. At the end of the day, just let them fucking pee where they need to pee and play whatever sports they need to play, because they just want to have a regular high school experience. Yeah. That's it.
They want to have that team mentality. They want to have that experience. Most of these kids aren't going to college and playing. They're not going to be in the Olympics. They're not going to go pro. No. They just want to have that experience during.
Just let them be kids. Yeah. Come on. Like, stop fucking things up for them. Yeah. And it just breaks my heart. And the suicide rate amongst these kids is high. And it's like, why are we making it harder for them? You know, why?
And yeah, I mean, they're already going through it. They're already going through a ton of shit, just mentally trying to wrap their brain around being transgender. Right. And then we're going to complicate things and tell them that they're wrong and that they're not accepted and they can't do things like everybody else can. That's just going to fuck them up even more. It's not okay to do stuff like that.
No.
You know, and I get it.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah, I get kind of, well, no, I don't get it, where some of these parents are coming from. I have the perspective, because when my oldest came and said, "Hey, Dad, I'm transgender," I had to wrap my brain around it. I had to, well, how does this change my relationship with him at this point? Mm-hmm. You were my little girl and now you're my little boy. How does this change? And as much as this may make me sound like an asshole, I couldn't understand how that changes. And what I had to really realize is it doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
I don't have to understand fully what he's going through. I just have to know that I'm still his dad.
Right.
And that's it. That's it.
Right. Exactly. And that's good. I'm glad that you're supportive, you know, and I'm glad that you're using the correct pronouns.
It's tough sometimes. It's really tough sometimes, because you just kind of forget. And I don't do it when I forget. I don't do it purposely. It's just, it's tough. You know, for 15 years it was she and now it's he, or 14 years or whatever it was at the time. And it's tough sometimes. And most people are going to be understanding of that. As long as you're trying. And I think that's the biggest thing. We gotta try to understand. We have to try to figure out within ourselves, does it really make that much of a difference on my life, whether this is a trans male or a trans female, it doesn't make a difference. It really right. doesn't.
Right. People are so concerned with gender, and it's such a construct. Yeah. Gender is such a construct, and they need to know what's in your pants, and it's frustrating. And it's almost like they need to know, so they know how to treat you, you know? And there's been so many studies around that as well, like with emails, people that have changed their name and how they have been treated with more respect when they have a masculine name.
Yeah.
And how that yeah. looks. And
yeah. one of my good friends is a trans male, and he says that the way people interact with him as a male is completely different than before. And it yeah. blows his mind that yeah. people treat him differently because he presents very well as a man. Mm-hmm. And he says as he's transitioned to be a male, his feminist side has gotten stronger because he understands the bullshit. Right.
The bullshit. There's so much bullshit
on both sides. It. Yeah.
There's so much. And because female things are looked at to be lesser, right? Like, mm-hmm. and I see it with my children, you know, having a non-binary child, they say it to my kids all the time. And we have to push back all the time. They say it to me, to my face, as I have a shaved head wearing a feminist shirt, mm-hmm. they say it to my face and to my child, who's clearly wearing clothing, pushing gender norms.
Yeah.
You know, taking, not right now because we're in a pandemic, but taking a gymnastics class, you know, don't worry, you won't have all girls in your class. There's also boys in your class. And I'm like, excuse me? And my child is like, why does that matter? Like,
yeah.
girls are not lesser. Like, why are you saying this to me? You know, and but people treat girls as if they are lesser, you know, yeah. and they say it to my face and they say it to my child's face, you know, and it's a problem. And so, yeah, and we deal with it all the time. And so, and we push back on it because we say, well, this is not a problem. So I don't know why you're saying this to us.
Yeah. yeah.
It
shouldn't be a problem. I mean, they're in a gymnastics class. Right. They're in a gymnastics class. It doesn't make a difference if there's boys or girls.
We don't care.
They want to be in gymnastics.
Like,
do it.
They're just happy to be in gymnastics. Like, yeah, and it was just so weird that they were saying it to me, because at that time, the way I was presenting was clearly like I looked like a butch dyke. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, why are you saying this? Like, oh my God. And my kid's wearing like all pink and tie dye. Like, why are you saying this to us?
Yeah.
Like, we don't care.
It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's these issues that just come up, but they're really non-issues and people just make them issues, and it's ridiculous. Something that I found interesting, it's kind of switching gears a little bit, that I've seen you kind of talk about, is that you don't buy new stuff.
Oh yeah.
Everything is used, everything is traded. Yeah. What made you do that? What was the motivation behind that?
Yeah, I mean, so I kind of a hippie at heart, but I sit on the board for the SLC Air Protectors.
Uh-huh.
And in that, I mean, we're big environmentalists, you know, like we got involved with a lot of legislation for clean air.
And, which Salt Lake definitely needs, because
we have really bad air here. And so we're always fighting for clean air. And they were part of the coming back from Standing Rock with clean water. Mm-hmm. And so we are a native led organization. And so with part of that, you know, they do things with planting gardens and in the community, and they work a lot anyway with clean air, clean water. And every year I was always looking at how I impact the environment and how I can do better just in my little family unit with me and my two kids.
Yeah.
And how I could reduce my use of single use plastic and, you know, planting a garden and, you know, collecting rainwater and composting and I now drive an electric car, and just what can I do as just one person, and, you know, fighting with the legislature and killing bills that have to do with plastic, and, you know, just what can I be doing? And so, so one of those ways was to try to cut back on buying new stuff, and as much as possible. And so, so that's what we started doing. Now, of course, like, I buy my underwear new.
I hope so.
And I buy my socks new. Yeah. And so there are limits that I do buy new.
Yeah.
And like my glasses that I wear, those are new. My toothbrushes are new. So there are, not everything is used.
Right.
But I am a huge bargain shopper of used and free things, and I belong to a free group. And I try to get as many things as free for as possible. And then I also give things for free for my free group. And then my kids, they just, at their dad's house, they get free, they get new stuff at my dad's, at their dad's house. So they'll get shoes and stuff at dad's house for new and whatnot. But at my house, they know that, you know, Christmas time, like, I'm giving them used clothing, and they're fine with that. But you know what? I find them really good stuff. Like, my one kid is into tie-dye and loves unicorns and rainbows. And I found the coolest stuff at Savers, like really cool tie-dyed stuff and really cool unicorn leggings. And I got it all used. Oh, and I found this amazing pink furry radical, it looked like a rock star coat.
Awesome.
At Savers. And then my other son is really into soccer.
Yeah.
And I found the coolest jerseys that are normally so expensive.
Oh, I know.
And I found them all at Savers for super cheap. And so, and I figured, you know what, like, reduce, reuse, recycle. It's just my way of just how I impact the economy, and just part of reduce, reuse, recycle is just buying as much as I can, not new. And then also just giving it back to the community. So when we're done using it, I put it on the free group, and then I'm able to like give it back for free, or we donate, you know, to different organizations. Mm-hmm. And so it can go back. And so, but yeah, we do that. As, in fact, this mug, look how rad this mug is. If you can see it, this is from my free group.
That's,
isn't that amazing?
It's the ceramic, like, almost gradient type of
it's gorgeous, right? Yeah, it's an art piece. And then this, I needed my gratitude journal that I keep. So I like to keep it like in a calendar type, like every day. I posted on my free group that I needed like a calendar like journal. Mm-hmm. And so somebody got a hold of me and it was like, oh, the school I'm at gives us one and I'm not using it. Here's that, so I don't have to buy it.
That's awesome.
So it's just, I get so much good stuff on that free group. But
it's been kind of inspiring to watch you do that, and really kind of knowing that this is what I stand for and this is what I'm going to do to back that up.
Thanks. Like,
doing nothing, everything that's used, and if you can get it for free, and, you know, not having to reduce your waste buying the electric car. I mean, and those like an electric car, I mean, that's not a cheap thing to go out and do.
I mean, it was only $14,000. I mean, there's, I mean, it's not cheap, but I mean, there's more expensive cars I could have gotten.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and it's,
I mean, it's not a fancy car by any means. It's very simple.
it's a Leaf, right?
Yeah. It's a Leaf. It's an old Leaf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know as they get older, the range on those don't, I mean, you're not taking road trips in it.
Yeah, nope, I'm not taking any road trips in it at all. I'm very limited, but you know what?
Drive an
electric car. It's a great around town car.
Yeah. And that's really what it's for. It's just for around town. And that's what most people buy them. I've seen my kids' parents have Leafs, and they love them.
I love my Leaf. And eventually I'd love to get like a car that goes further, you know, like the Volts go like 250 miles or something.
Yeah.
And
it's getting there, I think, with like Chevy and Tesla, that's pushing the limits of those batteries. You're and the charging technology that's coming with them, you'll be able to go further. Unfortunately, a lot of those are much more expensive.
Yeah. And the city has free charging stations. Like by my girlfriend's house, there's a free charging station. And so it's real nice. Like I can just pop up there and charge for free. And so,
yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So so it's just like our way. And I don't judge people that do it differently for the record. Like we just try as much as possible in our house. Like, how can we do this? And so, my kids are on board. Like they know, like, you know what I mean? And there was like one time I brought home a plastic water bottle because I can't remember where I was. I was somewhere and somebody gave it to us. And I got it home. My kids were like, "What are you doing? You brought home a plastic water bottle?" They were like, "Who are you?" Because they know we use reusable bottles, you know, and we recycle glass and we, you know, like they know. And I was like, I was somewhere and someone gave it to me and we're going to recycle it. But so much of what we recycle doesn't get recycled. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so much of what we recycle doesn't get recycled. And so
it just goes in, they just separate it out, and the majority of it just gets separated and goes right into the landfill. It doesn't go, it doesn't get recycled. Yeah. You know, and they do that with their normal garbage too. They separate things out. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, most of it goes into a landfill.
Yeah. So we try to just be really aware. And like, I support Olio. They're a local company that like I use for most of my products, and the deodorant I use, like the packaging doesn't have plastic. Mm-hmm. And so I even try to like, the stuff I'm using doesn't have plastic. And so my deodorant, I mean, I could get up and show you, but it doesn't matter. We're not videoing this.
It's audio. Podcast.
But yeah. So they have cardboard around their deodorant. And I'd asked them years ago to make a deodorant, and then they finally mastered it. And so, then I use a soap bar, you know, for my hair. So no plastic. And then Hello Bulk is like a great way to also reduce your plastic, so that you can just go and refill your products. So you're not... Hello, you can bring your own containers. They do the Hello Bulk. It's in Salt Lake. Yep, it's in Salt Lake City. You can refill your products and not use plastic. So I'm just always trying to find ways just to not use plastic. And but yeah, that's, I know I sound insane right now, but
you know what? You sound insane. No, we all have to do our own thing, though. I make my own soap because I can, and I don't want to buy store soap. So I've developed and made my own soap, and I started doing this with my ex-wife Shannon when we first moved to Utah, and it was a lot of fun, and we learned about it, and I've just kind of carried it on even after we've kind of separated.
That's great.
It's wonderful. And if you can find like-minded businesses that are willing to do like the refillery, or companies that are going to reduce their packaging, why not support those things?
I'm so big on like no chemicals and like packaging. And like I use King and Colton King. They're a local company also because they use bamboo packaging and like, for my hair and my hair products. And so like
That's awesome. A little
obsessive crazy about it, but I'm big on like vegan products and like and it does sometimes cost me a little bit more, but it's like I'd rather support local and I'd rather support good products where I'm not putting junk in my system, you know,
right?
And keeping the landfills clean, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think even just supporting locally, I mean, that's going to stimulate the economy and the people that are here. And because that's just going to go right back into, you know, our local economy, and then hopefully they're supporting other local businesses. And we really do need to support the people that are here, not these massive corporations that don't really care.
It's probably one of the things I'm loudest about is just supporting local. Like I don't go to chain restaurants. That's like a big no-no for me. And I'm so thankful for a girlfriend she just has like, our philosophies are the same, you know, Like, she's very, yeah, she's so big. I mean, she even supports her cute little local grocery store by her house, which I love. So, like, she's just very big on supporting local, and I love that. But yeah,
and that's important when you're in a relationship, that you've got the same ideals and things.
Yeah,
you know, you have to.
You know, she won me over before we ever went on our first date. She, on her own volition, brought up Rocky Votolato, which is a band that I have listened to since, like, I don't even know, 2003, 2004.
Okay.
And circling back around to us talking about music, underground music, in the very beginning of this conversation, music is so important to me. And I've loved underground music, you know, since I was a kid. And she brought it up, and I just was like, I've got to go out with this woman. Yeah. Like, holy shit, she has good taste in music. Yeah. So
it's important.
It is important.
Yeah. And
so, yeah, she kind of won me over with her taste in music. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean,
there's other good things about her too.
Oh, I'm sure. but there's always that one thing that says, yeah, okay, let's.
I know. Let's explore this a little bit. My interest. I was like, who is she?
Good on you. I mean, it's fantastic. Well, Kat, it's been a pleasure. You know, I think.
Thanks for chatting with me. I'm glad we got it figured out.
Yeah. A little bit, but we got it figured out, and we'll.
Yep.
It's been a pleasure, and it's been far too long.
I know.
Even just had a conversation or something, but after all this pandemic thing is done, we should get lunch or something.
We absolutely should. Yeah. Let's do that.
It'd be fun. So people can find you on Facebook, like Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram places. Is just Kat Palmer Photography. My website's just my name, Kat Palmer.
Kat Palmer.
I spell my name with a C, like a kitty cat, meow, meow.
Yep. Fantastic.
Yep.
Thanks so much again. Yeah, no problem. It's been a pleasure. You have a great one. We'll touch base later.
Thanks.
Too.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoyed listening in on our conversation with Kat Palmer. She is an absolute gem here in Salt Lake City. I love her to death. We've known each other for quite a while, and it was fun to have her in the studio here, or actually over Skype, because of the whole pandemic thing. And I think so. It is. it was a fun conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, be kind, be well.